It's time for Success Profiles Radio with your host, Brian K. Wright. Have you ever wondered if there's more to life than you're currently living? Then Success Profiles Radio is the program for you. Every week, we'll explore different aspects of success and how to apply them to your life. Guests will come from many different backgrounds, including expertise in leadership, business, relationships, careers, networking, health, overcoming adversity, and much more. Every show is a dose of inspiration. This is Success Profiles Radio. And now, here's your host, Brian K. Wright.
Hello and welcome to Success Profiles Radio. I'm your host, Brian K. Wright, and it's a pleasure to be with you here today. I'm honored that you chose to spend part of your day with me here, and this is going to be a fantastic and amazing show. I will introduce my guest momentarily, and I promise we're going to have fun and learn a lot along the way. I do want to take a minute or two to share some things I've been learning and thinking about lately, and I typically do this every single week. One of the ideas we hear about a lot in personal development or building a successful life is to identify what you want and make plans to have that happen. This is certainly true, but what people often do not think about is that you need to also figure out what you don't want to do. What are you unwilling to tolerate any longer? Who are you no longer willing to have around? And most importantly, why not? If you draw your line in the sand and say no more, that will cut off a lot of options that don't serve you at all, and it allows you to focus on the things that will serve you. This might mean disappointing a few people, but so what? It's your journey. I resolved a long time ago that I am not required to explain my journey to someone who will never understand it. It is a fruitless exercise. So just remember this. Resolve today to identify what you are no longer willing to tolerate. Draw your line in the sand. You will feel more peaceful, more powerful, and more productive, and you will be so glad you did. If you have not downloaded and subscribed to Success Profiles Radio on Apple Podcasts or iTunes, please do that. Leave a five-star review if you think we're worth it, and I certainly hope you think we are. We've been doing this for over 12 years, and this is episode number 556. I cannot wait for us to get going. And with that in mind, my very special guest this week is Rich Moyer. Let me tell you about him. Over the last 6 years, he has built and sold multiple businesses. Right now, he's the founder of Hoppin, one of the fastest-growing self-serve brewery franchises in America. He's sold multiple businesses, and in the past couple of years, he's generated over $15 million in sales. Early in his career, he was also a PGA professional golfer. Now, he's on a mission to help other entrepreneurs start, grow, scale, and sell their businesses without having to take on a bunch of venture capital or to go through all the trial and error that many of us face. We have a lot to unwrap and unravel today during the show, so here we are with my very special guest, Rich Moyer. Rich, welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
Hey, you're so welcome. So my favorite question to open with is, did you envision early on that you would be where you are right now?
Geez, in 2013, I envisioned a lot of things, and one of them was not where I am right now. It was completely different, basically staying in a sales role. And a lot of the goals that I wrote down on a piece of paper in 2013, took a picture of them and put them on my phone as my home screen and looked at them every single day. All of those things happened. From 2013 to 2017, but the way that they happened were completely different than what I envisioned. So absolutely not that I think I would be in this position, but absolutely did think I would be successful.
Yeah, the power of visualization is really amazing. In fact, I've got a friend, his name is Steve Gavlin. He teaches a vision board program, and he would tell his students exactly what you did. You know, have your goals written somewhere where you have to look at them all the time. The more you look at them, the more likely you will take action toward the things that you want. And so I love that very much. So what did your path look like prior to what you're doing now?
Yeah, at a young age, I was very athletic, very competitive, played sports growing up, was varsity, played three varsity sports as a freshman in high school. And out of high school, went down to Myrtle Beach, got into golf. And then that led me into just becoming a Class A PGA professional, a club pro and teaching pro down there. So leading up to that, you know, I realized that I was on the wrong side of the counter watching all my members come in and play golf during the week and on during the holidays, and I was working. So golf kind of led me into realizing, hey, there's a bigger opportunity out here to be able to play the game of golf and not work in the game of golf. And all my members were in sales or they own their own businesses. So I reverted to asking them for an opportunity and ended up getting an opportunity in sales. Sales led me into starting my first company at 26 years old in 2014.
Wow. So with a bunch of your friends, you started a construction company early on, didn't you?
I started one with one, one of my good buddies at the time. Me and him started it, and I ended up buying him out about a year in. And he's we're still very good friends, and he's super successful in what he's doing. But yes, me and him started it. I ended up buying him out, and grew that company very rapidly, and sold it two months into my fourth year.
That's really quick. So what was the growth like between when you bought it and when you sold it?
Started the company basically with no money. I think we both put about $2,500 into it, and we just kind of kept all the money going back into the business. First year I did 1.8 million. Second year I did 3.6 million, and then third year I did 6.5 million, and sold it for multi-millions that following year.
That is absolutely amazing. Congratulations on that.
Thanks.
What do you attribute that to?
Sales. I mean, if you can sell, you can do anything. And then in the construction world and in life, do what you say you're going to do. If you say you're going to be somewhere, you show up and you be there at that time. So in construction, there's just a lot of failed opportunities from most contractors. Their people didn't show up, or they didn't finish the job. They left 10% of it or 5% of it and unfinished. So I think in that world, me picking up my phone, doing what I said I was going to do, and showing up when I said I was going to show up, just snowballed. And it's a small community and construction. Everybody understands once you have somebody that does what they say they're going to do, you just keep feeding them business. And it's very relationship based. So sales, if you can sell, you can do anything. And then obviously doing what you say you're going to do.
That's fantastic. You also started an ice cream shop.
Yeah. Two of my best friends, when I was, still in my construction world, one of my best friends was like, hey, my uncle gave me his recipe and homemade ice cream, and I would love to open one in Charlotte. Would you invest? And one of my other good buddies who was working for me at the time is good friends with him, and he's had the ice cream. So I said, hey, how good is this ice cream? Is it worth my investment? And he's like, it's unreal. So thought it was a really cool opportunity, very low initial cost to get our first location open. And it ended up being a staple in Charlotte. It's called Two Scoops Creamery. We have six locations now, with a few more opening this year. And I've been very fortunate to have amazing partners and that handle the day-to-day and the bigger picture items we all work on together. But them guys are awesome partners.
What do you look for in a business partner? Because not everyone who partners with their friends has it work out.
Yeah, I've had multiple opportunities that didn't work out partnering with friends, and some of them we no longer talk. Some of them we still have a good relationship, and the business itself might have just not worked out. But one of the biggest thing, if you're going to get in the business with somebody, is it's a marriage. So understanding your roles and understanding that you complement each other, and then both. I'd say the biggest thing for me is making sure everybody has skin in the game. If your money is up, you'll work a little bit harder. I've been the one to always put the money up, and I've realized that if they don't have any skin in the game, they don't really put in the effort that I put in.
Yeah.
So it's just really complimenting each other and then making sure that they have some money in the game.
Perfect. Perfect. So going back to golf for just a second, what great lessons did you learn from golf that you've carried forward to your business career?
Relationships, shake hands with anybody and everybody. You never know who you're going to meet. I think just over the years, 6 years of being in the golf industry, I met so many successful people and so many people that, been through a lot. So being able to shake hands with pretty much anybody and growing relationships and still have those relationships long term, it's in business and in golf and in life, you never know who you're going to meet. So just shake hands with everybody, get to know them and build a relationship.
Fantastic. What do you think is your big mission right now in business?
Biggest mission is continue to grow Hoppin, franchising that across the country, and get that to a point over the next 3 to 5 years where I have some PE, some private equity come in and have interest in buying either the entire company or taking some chips off the table. That's the biggest thing business-wise and business-related.
That's a great goal. So do you always start businesses with an exit strategy in mind at the beginning, or were you thinking this is just going to be my legacy and I'll just grow it until whenever?
Yeah, I've always said, I don't fall in love with anything. Everything's for sale except for my family, my wife and my dogs and my son. So yeah, everything is for sale. I don't ever go in anything as a legacy play. I do go into it with the hopes of growing it to a point where I can sell it. But on the flip side, I go into it with the intention of doing the right thing and taking care of the people that are helping me grow it and giving opportunities to people that maybe didn't have an opportunity to do that and learn from me and have some mentorship along the way. So with franchising, I'm able to do that franchisees across the country and help them, which is really, really cool. So the bigger picture is always how do I help the people around me? And that's my purpose. And, money's just a way to keep count. It just happens to go with it as long as you're doing the right things.
For sure. What would you consider your greatest learning moment in your business so far?
Oh man, over the last 10 years, I would say the biggest thing I've learned, I would say, is that failing is the best thing for you, right? I mean, we don't learn anything being successful. We learn everything by failing. So failing has been by far the best thing that has ever happened to me throughout the last 10 years, because it's allowed me to jump leaps and bounds. I always say failing is the trampoline to your success. And there's no truer words to be said that if you go into something thinking that it's going to go perfect and you're not going to fail, you'll quickly realize that that's not true.
Yeah, for sure. We've got less than 2 minutes to our first break. What do you think is the most expensive mistake you have ever made? It doesn't have to be financial, although it can be. It could be something that you didn't start soon enough or something that you held on to for way too long.
Yeah, I'd say potentially getting into business with people that didn't put in the same effort that I put in. And again, not having any skin in the game. That's by far some of the bigger mistakes that I've made. But again, I don't really call them mistakes or failures. That helped me grow so much and learn so much. And that's really the lesson that I got from it.
That is a really valuable lesson too, because sometimes you just get so in love with the idea of being in business that you forget to pay attention to the things that are going on in the business, and you hope and you wish and you pray that it works out, but you can't just hope and wish and pray for a problem to go away. You got to actually do something about it, right?
100%.
Absolutely. What do you think is the highest value skill anyone can develop before we go to the break?
Being a people person, right? Having the right perspective, I think, is probably the biggest thing that is beneficial for me, is just having the right perspective and understanding that you're going to have some highs, you're going to have some lows, but there's somebody out there that has it way worse than you, and there's somebody that has it way better than you. And if you have the right perspective, you can get through any situation.
Absolutely fantastic. We are coming up against our break. My very special guest is Rich Moyer, and we will talk more after the break about building a business. We'll talk about franchising. We'll talk about so much more when we come back. This is Success Profiles Radio.
Mission is to motivate and inspire others to discover their unique talents and follow their dreams in life. This is Success Profiles Radio.
It's merging neighborhood.
If you're like me, sometimes you have trouble choosing between being a couch potato or going out. Hey, it's a big decision for us scabberlatchers. A scabberlatcher, or a ragabash, is another word for a lazy person. Well, a couple from California seems to have solved the problem by inventing a motorized sofa. You may think they're just spinning their wheels, but people have spotted the couple cruising down the street on their drivable Davenport in West Los Angeles and Santa Monica. No word yet on the couple's identity, but a man claiming to be a relative said it's all well within the norm for his fun-loving cousin. I don't know if this Chesterfield on wheels is street legal, but either way, I think the police would have to put up quite a chase before they could coach him.
It's merging neighborhood.
I'm Carolyn Davidson, and you can have fun challenging your words you never heard vocabulary with my free app, Too Funny for Words.
Have you ever thought about writing a book? Surveys show that 81% of people wish they could, but many never do. If you're one of those people, I can tell you why. You don't think you have time, you may not know how, or you might not believe you are a good enough writer. When you're working with an experienced coach, these reasons go away, because I will help you every step of the way. If you want to know more about how to write a nonfiction book, whether it's business, self-help, or how-to, reach out to me at www.briankwright.com for more information. Once again, that's briankwright.com.
Welcome back to Success Profiles Radio. So many people live their lives wanting more than they currently have. And this show will clearly demonstrate the principles, if I can do it, you can do it. So let's get back to the show. This is Success Profiles Radio. And here again is your host, Brian K. Wright.
we are back. This is Success Profiles Radio. My very special guest this week is Rich Moyer, and we're talking about building businesses. We'll be talking about franchising and some other topics related to building and scaling businesses to seven figures and beyond. If you've not picked up my latest book, it dropped about a month ago. It's called The Greatest Lessons I Learned from My Coach. And if you don't have a coach, you really should, for a lot of reasons, and I've documented those in the book. But you can get it on Amazon. Once again, that's called The Greatest Lessons I Learned from My Coach. So, Rich, how important is it to set really big goals? I know that we talked a little bit about how you had some goals on your phone back in 2013, but how important is that for us to set bigger goals than we think we might be able to attain?
I think it's super important to be able to set a goal where you're shooting for the stars, because if you fall short, you're still in the clouds and it's not a bad place to be. But it's important to write them down, right? I mean, if you can visualize it, for me, if I visualize it and I say it, it's already done. Now it's just taking the action to execute it. So I think if you can visualize it and you can look at it and, you know, have a reason to wake up and get out of bed and actually, you know, go achieve those goals. If you don't write them down, then you're really kind of waking up aimlessly and working for nothing. So I always say, yeah, shoot for the stars and you can fall in the clouds at worst.
Yeah, for sure. Why do you think people are afraid to do that? Do you think it's because they fear failure? Do you think they fear that they might actually achieve it and it changes things?
100% fear of failing. And it's probably what stops most people from being successful or starting their own thing, right? An idea is great. It's just an idea. But if you don't actually take the action to go do it, then you're sitting there 4, 5, 6 years later with the idea. And it's funny, my parents thought about Uber back before technology was really even a thing. And they look back like, man, we could have started that, but it was just an idea. They never did anything with it. So I think the ability to have an idea is great. Every business I own or I've invested in, none of them were my idea. I was just the guy that put up the work and took the action to do it.
It's interesting too, because some people like starting something from the very beginning. Other people prefer to invest in something that already has legs. I would imagine that's a safer bet to make, isn't it?
Yeah, especially now with, you know, the amount of companies that are owned by, you know, the older generation that are going to be for sale. I mean, there's so much opportunity that they just run them their old school way. One of my buddies just bought his dad's company, and it was just ran very, very old school. So to bring in new school and new ideas and marketing and just technology into these older businesses, I mean, there's so much opportunity to buy existing companies right now and take that and just with a huge upside. And on the flip side, there's franchising, which if you never owned your own business, there's so many franchise opportunities, obviously Hoppin being one of them. And those franchise opportunities can be minimal cost to get in or several million dollars to get in. But you have a team, you have a proven concept, and you have the support if you've never opened up your own business, or you have kind of a fear of starting your own business, but you want to get into that entrepreneurial world.
Absolutely. And we'll talk about Hoppin here in just a couple minutes. So you had coaches and mentors at the beginning of your journey who showed you the way, right? How important has that been for you?
Mentorship is great. And it's more of just having somebody that almost pushes you and is more of a cheerleader. And then if you can learn from the mistakes that they've had, everybody's journey is completely different, right? So if your mentor is doing exactly what you want to do, your journey is going to be 1,000% different, the hurdles you go through. But to be able to have that mentorship and guidance and just lean on them and just them continue to push you through those tough moments, the mentorship is amazing. And then just kind of open up your eyes. I think one of the best things that one of my mentors did was just open up my eyes to see the world a little bit differently and the opportunities that are out here.
Yeah. So how do you pick the right one? Is it referral, word of mouth, people that you've observed?
If I go back to, you know, for me, it was just shaking hands with the right people and then just having that relationship and that growing over time and just understanding how successful they were and just me wanting to be in their back pocket, understanding, you know, what they did, what they went through. And more for me was, you know, what lessons did they learn from failing and how can I avoid those things so I can move quicker than they did? And that just really came down to shaking hands with people.
Yeah. So in business, and I think Gino Wickman wrote a book that addresses this. There are visionaries and there are integrators. So in your experience or your observation, are you the person with the big ideas or are you the person that enjoys implementing them more?
So early on, I'm the person that likes to take the risk and implement it. But now, as we continue to grow, I need the actual implementer, right? So for franchising, for Hoppin, I'm hiring a president. He starts end of next month, and he is complete opposite of me. He's a complete implementer, and I'm the visionary and the bigger, the founder, the one that's seeing things at a bigger picture. But early on, like starting a company, I like to be the implementer because I want to know the ins and outs of it. And it's a little bit easier, but as you grow and you have multiple locations and definitely a bigger platform of growth, you need to bring on the right people.
Exactly. So speaking of bringing on the right people, let's talk about bringing on executives. Some people feel like they have to bring someone on full time to experience growth, but there are a lot of people now. Fractional executives is a big movement now. There are fractional COOs, fractional CMOs, CFOs. You have fractional executives in your companies, right?
Yeah, I have a fractional CMO, Momentum Brands, and they're amazing. Brooke and Holly are great, and it's something that, you know, it's cost is not cheap, but it's definitely less expensive than bringing on a full-time CMO.
So how many hours a week do they work with you?
So we have one meeting a week for an hour, and then they help out. If I look at what they create for us and what they do for us, I would say they work 40 hours a week, but they probably work 5 to 10 hours a week.
That's fantastic. I love that. I mean, I have friends, and we talked, you know, during the break about this. I've got friends who are fractional executives, and they love the gig. And is that something that you could see yourself doing at one point if you decide owning the whole kit and caboodle is just not for you anymore?
Yeah, I think as I get a little bit older and my experience now, you know, when I sell Hoppin and I sell some of my other businesses and some of my investments sell, I can see myself more as a VC or a PE and investing in companies and also being more of a fractional CMO or CFO or COO or fractional CEO for them and just kind of help guide them at the smaller stage.
For sure. So you've referred to Hoppin, which is your current business. It's a brewery. Tell us about this. Tell us how you started this and what makes it different from other bars and restaurants in the marketplace.
Yeah, so we are a high-tech self-serve tap room. We have 60-plus taps at every one of our locations. And when you check in, you get a wristband. It's an RFID wristband that's attached to your credit card. And then you have access to pour, you know, a tenth of an ounce of any drink that you want that's on tap. Some of our locations have beer, wine, ciders, seltzers, and cocktails on tap. Some of our locations, depending on the state, do not have cocktails on tap, and we have full cocktail bars. So the concept is completely different than any of your traditional bars for multiple reasons. One, the experience. We're an experienced company. You can go get a McUltra at any bar in the world. You know, what makes us different? So it's going to be the experience when you come in. It's going to be the vibe, the actual interior design, the actual vibe of the entire place. And then three, the self-serve is pretty new in relevance to how many locations or how many cities have it. And on the flip side, you know, we have an opportunity with franchising that makes us different because we don't have food, and most restaurants are just, you know, it's tough right now with food cost and margins. So we partner with local food operators, whether it be a food truck or a neighboring restaurant, to handle our food. And we provide them basically a 4,000 to 6,000 square foot dining room that they don't have to pay rent on. So it's a win-win for both parties. And we've eliminated 95% of a typical bar owner's headaches with our technology and getting rid of the back of house food.
That's actually really, really creative. So you have food trucks come in, they use your space, they provide the food, you take a cut of what they've done, and you don't have the headaches of having full-time cooks or the food, and they don't have to rent space. They can just be mobile.
Yep.
That's fantastic. So tell us what the early part of this journey was like, because this is a concept I had never heard of before. Self-serve, you know, beer on tap is a pretty creative idea. So what was your early journey like in this business? Was there a lot of resistance to this idea?
Early on was very welcoming. Charlotte, we were the first ones to have self-serve beer in Charlotte, North Carolina, and it was self-serve beer, wine. And the acceptance was huge. We poured over 3.5 million ounces our first year in business. So it was welcomed. It was a lot of curiousness, like, cool, I get to pour my own drink. You know, teaching, educating people how to pour their own drink and what to do, what not to do, and then just providing a super cool experience. And that's when we really started to see that, you know, there was an opportunity to make this bigger than just one location. And it was really a lot of people coming in from out of state saying, how do I open this in my city?
And that was probably your aha moment that maybe this is franchisable.
Yeah. That, and then just understanding after opening it, how easy it is to operate, right? I've owned so many companies, and this one by far is the easiest one. Once the doors are open to manage, own, operate, and, you know, it's just, we've eliminated a lot of the headaches. So it's a very minimal staff. We have 8 to 10 employees per location, and, you know, you only need 4 or 5 on a Friday, and then, you know, 6 or 7 people working on a Saturday all day. So the ability to have low overhead and great margins on the alcohol side is the big win.
Fantastic. We've got a couple minutes to our next break. What would you say are some of the greatest growing pains you experienced as you were trying to scale this?
Definitely just understanding the demographics of future locations for me. And I've realized that now more so than ever with our second location. It was a different brand, but similar concept. And we just were on more of an island, right? So understanding to be in the mix and be around other bars and restaurants is the key to being really successful. You can still be successful if you're on an island, but just you have to work a lot harder.
Yeah. Would you consider having locations at sporting events, or would there be just too much liability for something like that?
I mean, I would. It would have to be like a different concept, different model. It could still be a Hoppin' branded concept. But we've thought about airports. We've thought about sporting events. We've thought about the different opportunities that are out there. Our main focus right now is just the main tap room.
Yeah. Fantastic. We're coming up against our next break. Can't believe how much fun we're having. This is really cool. I love this whole concept of Hoppin', and we're talking with Rich Moyer. And after the break, we will talk about how to know if franchising is the best way to grow your business and how you prepare your business to be franchisable. Because once you decide to become a franchise, there are probably a lot of things that have to be in place before someone would even agree to buy a location from you. And we'll talk about how you find, buy, and scale your first franchise without having to spend very much of your own money if you want to. And we'll also talk about when you open a franchise, how do you know if a specific location will support your business? We have a lot to talk about when we come back. This is Success Profiles Radio.
The mission is to motivate and inspire others to discover their unique talents and follow their dreams in life. This is Success Profiles Radio.
Have you ever thought about writing a book? Surveys show that 81% of people wish they could, but many never do. If you're one of those people, I can tell you why. You don't think you have time, you may not know how, or you might not believe you are a good enough writer. When you're working with an experienced coach, these reasons go away because I will help you every step of the way. If you want to know more about how to write a nonfiction book, whether it's business, self-help, or how-to, reach out to me at www.briankwright.com for more information. Once again, that's briankwright.com. If you are in business, what is the number one thing that stops revenue growth? Not having enough leads. Data is the new gold rush. With PhoneSites, that is never an issue. You can generate as many leads as you want without paying a lead broker. With PhoneSites, you can build a website or sales funnel from your mobile device in 5 minutes or less without any technical skills or without downloading an app. It's easy, and you have nothing to lose. Try it for free for 14 days at PhoneSites.com/Brian. Once again, that's PhoneSites.com/Brian.
Welcome back to Success Profiles Radio. So many people live their lives wanting more than they currently have. And this show will clearly demonstrate the principles, if I can do it, you can do it. So let's get back to the show. This is Success Profiles Radio. And here again is your host, Brian K. Wright.
And we are back. This is Success Profiles Radio. My very special guest this week is Rich Moyer, and we're talking about franchising his self-serve pub called Hoppin', and it's growing exponentially all the time. And if you've not subscribed to Ultimate Achievers Magazine, please do that. We released our latest issue about a week ago, and we're working on May right now. You can go to ultimateachieversmagazine.com to read and subscribe and see every single issue we've done back to December 2017. In fact, if you read one issue a week, it would take you longer than a year to finish everything on the site. So please consider subscribing at ultimateachieversmagazine.com. So, Rich, if someone out there says, hey, I have a business, it's not this, but I have my own business, how do I know if it can be franchised or not?
Yeah, the franchising community is so tight and so supportive. I would definitely reach out to somebody like myself. If you're looking at the thought of franchising your business, and you know, I can give some advice, and I would just connect with other franchisors and just tell them your business model. We can ask some questions of like, what do you have in place? What system processes, and really dive a little bit deeper mm-hmm. and understand your business a little bit more. And then there's some brokers, there's some other definitely investors that may, if it is franchisable, that would help take a small percentage, invest in your company and help you grow it and help you from day one. So you eliminate a lot of the things that some franchisors run into. So definitely reaching out to existing franchisors if you know any of them. And mm-hmm. my doors are always open to have conversations with somebody that's interested in franchising their business. I think it's a really cool idea to be able to expand quickly and rapidly. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, I have so many connections now in the industry that I can make other introductions.
Yeah. I've got a friend who I interviewed on my show about a year and a half ago. He's involved in the company Dirty Dough. And so it's cookies, and he's been selling franchises, and he's grown really, really fast. So obviously, to be franchisable, you have to have systems that are duplicatable. You have to make sure that you are not the key cog in the business, because you can't duplicate yourself. No one wants to buy a job. But how do you prepare your business to be franchisable apart from those things?
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned Dirty Dough. Me and Bennett have chatted. That's why I say the franchising world is very, very small. So yeah, he's crushing it. I'd love to see what he's doing. And it's really cool to see what he went through with the cookie wars. But yeah, it's, if you want to actually give me that question again, I lost my train of thought there.
Yeah. How do you prepare your business to be franchisable? What needs to be in place before someone would even think about agreeing to buy a franchise from you?
Yeah. If I was to go back and just kind of start fresh, I think some of the things that I would have done was just understand franchising a little bit more and everything it takes to get your business to the position that you just mentioned to be franchisable. So legally, there's a ton of things that need to happen to create an FDD, and all that stuff is very easy once you find the right attorney, a franchise attorney. I think the tougher thing is we think we have all the policies, procedures, the systems in place to actually grow and scale at a bigger picture. But I think that number one thing I can say is that you need to take everything out of your mind and document it. And then take everything out of, if you have a director of marketing or a marketing person's mind, and document it. Everything out of your operations guy's mind or woman's mind and document it. So actually taking all the information that you guys just kind of do naturally, and it just, you only have one location or two locations, and it just happens because that's what you've been doing. Now you have to take it out of your mind and actually create a system, a guide, a document that you can hand to a franchisee and make it replicable. So that's the toughest, not the toughest thing, but it's time consuming to be able to do that. So just understanding that, yes, you may know how to do it, but you actually have to teach somebody that has never done it and provide them all the information and everything that you've done from starting your company, creating an LLC, construction, everything that you've done to open up your doors, and then everything after that.
And I would imagine it would be a really good idea to test your standard operating procedures on an employee in your company that doesn't work in the department that you're talking about, because if they don't understand it, you cannot expect someone not even in your company to get it either, right?
Yeah, 100%. And it's funny. I mean, we still, to this day, because things are always changing, especially in the marketing side of our business, you know, continue to document things and add them to our guides.
Yeah, for sure. So how do you effectively grow and scale your business so that you can potentially sell it for, you know, 7 or 8 figures? Because I know that that's the path that you've been on. You've sold companies for lots and lots of money. Tell us about growing and scaling and what that looks like day to day.
Yeah, the biggest thing is the people, right? Having the right people on your team that see the vision, and you've given them the vision and the growth plan, and understanding that they're the most important people that you have, right? Most people think the CEO is at the top, and they're the man or the woman, and they're the best. And I've always flipped it the other way around. I'm at the bottom of the pyramid. All my team works for me, or I work for them. They don't work for me. And people are going to be your number one thing to grow and scale a business. Because if you're just trying to be a one stop or one location mom and pop, then fine, you can be the person that runs the day to day. But if you want to grow and scale and have a bigger picture to a bigger exit, you need to hire the right people.
For sure. So let's just say that I want to buy a franchise rather than try to start my own. Obviously, you're buying systems that should be easily duplicatable. You should be able to get going a lot faster. So how do you find, buy, and scale your first franchise, hopefully without having to spend a lot of money doing it?
Yeah, if you're looking to buy a franchise, I mean, there's so many opportunities that are inexpensive to start, and there's multiple ways. You can go do the research yourself and find something that gets you excited and gets you out of bed, and something that you're passionate about and want to actually go do. Or you can get with a franchise broker or a franchise consultant. We call them brokers because they kind of broker deals for us. But to somebody that's looking to be a franchise or buy into a franchise, they're a consultant. So they can consult you for free, no cost to you. They get paid whatever franchise you end up going with, and they can present five, six, seven, eight opportunities to you that they think is a good fit based off of the conversations that you have, based off of the financials that you provide. And that, to me, if I was going to look for a franchise, I would probably go that route, unless there was just something that I walked into and I was like, man, that's a really cool concept, and find out that they franchise and know that that's it, and the gut feeling is there. But definitely leaning on a franchise consultant to help throughout that process, because there's a lot that goes into it.
That's absolutely fantastic. So let's just say that you've decided that you want to buy a franchise and open it. How do you know if a particular location or particular community will support your business? Now, I imagine with beer, the appeal is much more universal than if it was dry cleaning, for example, right?
Yes, 100%. And dry cleaning, one of my buddy actually owns a company called Laundry Lab, and they're franchising across the country. It's a laundromat, and they actually have a dry cleaning piece of it as well, or cleaning. So there's the biggest thing is obviously just leaning on the franchisor, right? We have technologies, we have things, and we work with our real estate team to actually pull out the demographics, the reporting that we need to see. Is this going to be a successful city or a successful territory? And with the new technology now, we can not guarantee that it's going to be successful, but have a really good idea that everything lines up, that this is going to be a successful area. So you personally really don't do much other than, if you know your city, you can come to Charlotte and say, all right, I see what's around our hopping. I need to replicate that in my city or get as close as possible. But we have technology that can pull data that is out of this world.
Right. And I would imagine too, if you're picking a location, there's a fine line between picking a location that's too close to an existing one so that you don't cannibalize each other, versus picking a location that's way too far away from the nearest one so that the community that you're in has no idea who you even are. There's a fine line there, right?
Yeah, and that's with everything, right? I mean, there's so many franchises, and what is that territory look like? How big does it have to be where you aren't cannibalizing the other locations? And some franchises, it's not a big territory. It's, McDonald's, you see them every so many blocks, I feel like. So it's just really understanding that, and then every FDD, it has a territory and how many miles you can open up next to the nearest one, and then you can negotiate as well.
You've mentioned FTD a couple times. Let's spell that out for those who don't know what that is, please.
Franchise disclosure document. So
There
it's
you go.
basically a 200 plus page document that franchisees will sign with the franchisor with their franchise agreement as well. And it's just basically the Bible of the business that you're buying into.
Great. So let's say that you have a franchise and it's rocking and rolling, you're doing great, and you're thinking about maybe getting another location or several locations. How do you know when that time is to go beyond your first location?
Yeah, we have a lot of franchisees that sign on for multiple locations right from the jump because they want, say, the whole city, right? Like Dallas, Texas, and Nashville, Tennessee, they both sign on for 3 units, and they didn't want somebody else coming in and having some of their territory. So I think, you know, believing in the concept, believing in the founder, believing in your city and territory is the most important thing. And then on top of that, you open up your first one, that one's successful, and then you roll into the next one, that one's successful, you roll into the next one. And then if you want to open up more after that, it's just a slow process because you got to open up the first one and then you roll into the next two. So it's really understanding your city, understanding, you know, the brand itself and the success it currently has, and making sure it's a good fit.
Yeah, I would imagine some people fall in love with having so many locations, they want to try and do all of it at the same time, and then they end up not doing any of it very well. So what I think I heard you say was start with one, get that going, then move to the next, get that going. Like you're playing Risk, right? You have all your armies on one territory, and as you conquer the next one, you leave one or two behind, and you move everybody to the next one and so on, right?
Yeah, 100%. You definitely don't want to. It'd be a lot of work to open up two or three at the same time.
Yeah, for sure. We've got less than 2 minutes until our final break. I can't believe how quickly this is going. Let's say that you want to start a business all by yourself without the franchise. How do you know if your idea is any good or not?
Yeah, you don't know until you get started. Now, honestly, there's, you know, you can do some calculate it. You can calculate your risk a little bit and understanding, you know, when we opened up the first ice cream shop here in Charlotte, there was really no homemade ice cream shop. So right. It was a risk because, well, is there a reason there's not any homemade ice cream shops, or is it just that the city was so, you know, still growing and still new that there just wasn't there yet? So I think the biggest thing is definitely understanding what's in the market, what's your competition, and is the competition somebody you want to be near, which in some businesses that is true, and then in other businesses you want to kind of be away from them, and yeah, understanding the city in depth and understanding what opportunity you're getting into, and then really it just takes the time and action to jump into it and actually get to work, because a lot of people will quit before they ever get started because they just never turn the idea into action, or they get to a point where like, man, this isn't working, or it isn't right. And truly it is right. They just need to just keep knocking on doors and continue to grind and take the action.
Fantastic. We are coming up against our final break. Down the stretch we come when we return. This is Success Profiles Radio.
Mission is to motivate and inspire others to discover their unique talents and follow their dreams in life. This is Success Profiles Radio.
If you are in business, what is the number one thing that stops revenue growth? Not having enough leads. Data is the new gold rush. With PhoneSites, that is never an issue. You can generate as many leads as you want without paying a lead broker. With PhoneSites, you can build a website or sales funnel from your mobile device in 5 minutes or less without any technical skills or without downloading an app. It's easy, and you have nothing to lose. Try it for free for 14 days at PhoneSites.com/Brian. Once again, that's PhoneSites.com/Brian.
First insurance policy in the American colonies was written in 1721. In England in the 1700s, you could buy insurance from going to hell. I imagine that insurance salesman was something of a skeezix. That's a person not to be trusted. Some insurance companies offer hole-in-one insurance for golf tournaments that award a prize to any player who makes a hole-in-one. One insurance company puts a PGA Tour pro's chances of making a hole-in-one at 1 in 3,756. Taxophobia, or the fear of taxes, began when the first income tax was levied by China in the year 10 AD. The IRS processes more than 2 billion pieces of paper each year. What's the word meaning to rule by paperwork? Paparocracy.
It's marching.
I'm Carolyn Davidson, and Words You Never Heard has been brought to you by the Bariatric Surgery Center of Dallas.
Welcome back to Success Profiles Radio. So many people live their lives wanting more than they currently have. And this show will clearly demonstrate the principles, if I can do it, you can do it. So let's get back to the show. This is Success Profiles Radio. And here again is your host, Brian K. Wright.
And we are back. This is Success Profiles Radio. My very special guest this week is Rich Moyer, and we're talking about building and scaling businesses. We're talking about franchising and everything relating to all of that. And once again, if you've not downloaded and subscribed to Success Profiles Radio on Apple Podcasts or iTunes, please do that. Leave a 5-star review if you'd like to. I would really love and appreciate that so, so much. So, Rich, when you started building your company beyond just yourself, how did you decide which role to hire first? Because I think that's a question a lot of people have. Do I hire sales first? Do I hire marketing first? What do I do?
Yeah, definitely hire my weakness, right? Hire something that's going to compliment me and something that doesn't really motivate me. I think that's the easiest hire is, you know, what doesn't motivate you or what drains you, right? If you like looking at numbers, but you don't really like going through all the QuickBooks and the financials and doing that, but you want to see the numbers, like bigger picture. But you had to do that because you were young and starting your business. You didn't have the money to hire somebody. You know, that's might be one of the first hires you make because it's just mentally draining you and it's stopping you from being more successful somewhere else and more productive somewhere else. So I always say hire your weakness and hire something that drains you that you don't want to do.
Perfect, perfect answer. So in the interest of growing a company, you have to have a culture that people want to be a part of, or else you're going to have a lot more turnover than you might really want. So how do you foster an employee first culture? I know this is something that you excel at.
Yeah, culture is super important in any business to be successful for retention. And I think that really comes down to what I said earlier with, you know, I work for my employees, they don't work for me. I need to give them the tools to be successful. But on the flip side, I also need to give them the vision to understand that there's a bigger growth plan than, you know, than just them having a one job and not ever having a future of growth. So there's multiple things that go into that. And then I've always been very, very important to me is for my employees to be there and understand what are their personal goals, right? What drives them? What gets them out of bed? So meeting with them once every 6 months and having the conversations of, you know, what are your goals? What do you want? Is it to buy a house? Is it to buy a new car? Is it to go on vacations? And then looking at how I can help them get to there, whether if it's looking at their financials, helping them create a budget, or driving into, you know, just the future of the next 6 months, 12 months to get them to the level that they want to be. And sometimes, you know, 6 month span, they might get pregnant and have a kid coming or whatever it may be. So just really understanding that I'm there to help them get to their goals, whether if it's start their own company, open up a hop in, or, you know, go on to another job. And, yeah, you know, that over time has been very fruitful for me. And I've retained staff for many, many years in small businesses, which isn't easy to do.
Yeah, for sure. And a lot of us have worked in companies where there's just so much tension around, you know, don't make mistakes. And I know that you have said earlier in the show, failure is the trampoline to success. So how do you incorporate that philosophy when you have people that are now working for you that may have worked in a fear-based culture before?
Yeah, I basically tell them I want them to make mistakes. I want them to fail. And we give them ownership in the position that they have. Never micromanage. They have full ownership. So, you know, my tap room managers have full ownership in their tap room. If a mistake happens or something happens that isn't necessarily on brand or is something that we needed to fix, we discuss it. You know, what happened? How do we make sure it doesn't happen again? And then what systems or what process do we put in place so it doesn't happen again? So we give them ownership in their position, not necessarily equity in a company, but ownership in their position to make them feel like, okay, I'm going to make decisions and I don't have mm-hmm. to go to Rich or to upper management for every decision I make. That is also another way to retain and keep employees because they feel like, hey, this is my spot. I want to take ownership in it. And if I make a mistake, nobody's going to come down on me hard. They're just going to say, hey, let's look at it and let's fix it and let's find a way to make sure it doesn't happen again.
So how do you differentiate between that versus I made a mistake so egregious that you can't possibly keep me around anymore? Where's that line?
Yeah. I mean, that comes through your core values, right? I mean, we have some very easy core values, and there's no gray area there. It's black and white, and you know, some of them for us are no stealing, no drinking on the job, and that's an easy fire. If somebody drinks on the job or somebody steals or gives a drink away for free, second one is cleanliness, and that's making sure that the tap rooms, the bars, everything stays clean at all times. And then the third one is to have fun, right? If you're going to come in miserable for a week straight, then we're going to have a conversation. If it doesn't change, then you're probably going to get let go. But very simple rules, and you know, sticking to your core values and understanding that those are black and white, and that's what you make decisions on as you grow. Even with your franchisees, you know, if they don't fit your core values, then you're probably not going to bring them on or award them a franchise.
Yeah. Some people might wonder, how can you possibly be miserable in a bar? But we bring our own set of problems to work, though, don't we?
Yeah. And everybody has bad days, right? As good as my perspective is on life and as my life is in general, you know, you have bad days. And we always tell our staff, like, if you're having a bad day, if work isn't going to cheer you up, then just take off. Especially with our business, it's super easy to run with one less person because of the technology we have. We'd rather you take the day off and do whatever is going to make you happy than come in and bring the team down.
Yeah, for sure. So are you currently selling franchise locations for Hoppin?
Yeah, we're selling across the country. There's a few states that we're not registered in, which is like California, New York, and a few others. But for the most part, almost every single state across the country we're franchising in. And we have 5 locations opening this year, an additional 5 that'll be opening after that. We actually have a group in Austin, Texas that's looking to sign 4 locations. And we have another group in DC that's going to be signing 2-ish locations over the next month. So a lot of growth happening and definitely franchising across the country.
Yeah. So if someone is wondering, how much cash do I need to buy into one of these in case I'm interested in going that route? What does that process look like?
Yeah, most people are going to lean on an SBA unless they're just well-funded and financially have the cash to do it. But if you're looking at all-in cash without any loans, SBA loans, you're $1.2 to $1.9 million to open the doors. If you're going with the SBA route, they're typically going to want $300,000 to $400,000, give or take, just depending on the building and what your total investment looks like.
Yeah, for sure. So what does the vetting process look like? What do you look for in a franchisee?
Yeah, so our director of franchise development has the initial calls with them. They make sure that they, you know, financially can afford it. So usually if you're going the SBA route, we'll refer you to our SBA lender. You're more than welcome to use anybody. And then you have to get, you know, approval that you can afford it. And then once that happens, the conversations continue. If they're a good cultural fit and they're super interested, and you know, we feel over the phone calls and Google Meets that they're a good fit and they feel like we're a good fit after those conversations, they'll fly to Charlotte. They'll meet me in person. We'll have a day together where we just really get to know each other, understand each other. For me, it's more of a good culture fit. Leadership is so important in what we do. The business is very easy to run, so I need the right people. Again, it comes down to people and perspective and personality. Mm-hmm. And they're here for a weekend. They'll spend some time with the team, see the locations, go through just, you know, a night in Charlotte and at Hoppin. And then if after all that, they're like, this is still a perfect fit. And after all that, we say this is a great fit for us culturally and leadership wise, then we move to the next steps, which is getting legal involved. They review the FDD, and lawyers and attorneys will kind of redline anything that they don't like or see that they want changed. And we're off to the races. They pay a $60,000 fee once they sign the FDD, and that's their initial franchise fee, and we help out throughout the entire process.
Fantastic. Give us one of your favorite case studies for someone who took one of these franchises and they're just blowing it up and doing great.
Yeah, right now we only have one. So we've been franchising since end of 2022, and it's a long process, longer process to with construction and permitting and getting the doors open. So we only have one that's currently open.
Okay.
And, you know, to see them open in a small city and be successful has been really cool. It's been a grind just with the current recession that we're in and economically, but to see them go through the winter time where it was slower and now picking up and starting to be profitable has been really cool. And they're just in a small market of 80,000-ish people. So our goal moving forward is to focus on the bigger cities and the cities where their demographics line up where we need them. But The other franchisee, it's just cool to see them go through the process this early on and just be so motivated to get their doors open, because the permitting and construction is the longest portion. And we want to get the doors open. They want to get the doors open. And it's always tough to dive into that permitting and construction side with patients.
Absolutely. We've got less than 3 minutes until the end. What has surprised you the most about entrepreneurship?
Man, the biggest surprise, I think, is how hard it is. I think the more I do it, it seems like it's easier. But then I look back on, just the last 4 years, since 2020, I had a business that I thought really couldn't, it was recession proof. There wasn't really nothing that could mess it up with alcohol. And then you get a pandemic and it shuts your doors completely. Mm-hmm. So I think just the never quitting and understanding that it's not easy. It's lonely. I always tell people mm-hmm. that want to be an entrepreneur, it's a lonely, lonely world, right? You are the only one. Everybody looks towards you to make every decision. And it doesn't matter how close people are to you, they really don't know what you're going through. There's so many things that I've learned over the last 10 years that I could talk about that in a whole nother podcast.
Absolutely. And as we wind down, the question I like to ask everybody: who inspires and motivates you?
Man, this is always one that hits home for me. My baby brother passed away at 2.5 from brain cancer, and he's the one that taught me more in 2.5 years than anybody has in 36 years. And it's the reason I have the perspective I have, and the reason that I want to help every individual around me to be better, and have a little bit different perspective on life. And, that is the one person that has taught me so much in life about life. Mm-hmm. And I'm thankful for those 2.5 years that he was with us.
Fantastic. And as we wind down, how do we find you, learn more about you, try with you, and vibe with you?
The easiest way to find me is just search Rich Moyer, hopping on Google. It'll pop up, probably my LinkedIn, my Instagram, all that. And feel free to follow me, message me on any one of my platforms, Instagram or LinkedIn. And would love to chat with anybody and in any reference to anything that they want to chat about. Just super open to it. Just cool to meet people, like I said.
All right. Well, Rich, thank you so much for being here. It was fun having you here. And this was a fantastic show.
Brian, thanks for having me. I enjoyed it.
And thanks to all of you for listening. This has been Success Profiles Radio. Join us every Monday at 6 p.m. Eastern, where I interview another world-class achiever, learn what they did, what they overcame, and the lessons we can learn along the way. Until next week, take care, everyone. Have a wonderful week, and we'll see you next time. Goodbye.
Thank you for being a part of Success Profiles Radio with your host, Brian K. Wright. Each week, we'll explore different aspects of success and how to apply them to your life. We'll have guests that will come from many different backgrounds, including expertise in leadership, business, relationships, careers, networking, health, overcoming adversity, and much more. For more on Brian and the show, check out his website, BrianKWright.com. If you've ever wondered if there's more to life than you're currently living, then Success Profiles Radio is the program for you. Join us again next week for more Success Profiles Radio with your host, Brian K. Wright.